An Osho Talk.
The Original Man. Talks on Zen.
Number 2.
Rinzai said, "If you meet a Buddha, cut him down. If you meet a patriarch, cut him down. If you meet an arhat, cut him down. If you meet your parents, cut them down. And if you meet your relatives, cut them down. Only thus will you be liberated. And if you are not held by externals, you will be disengaged and comfortably independent." After this mountain monk has said that there is no Dharma externally, students who do not understand this immediately make their interpretation of the internal. They then sit against the wall with the tongue touching the palate to be in a motionless position and regard this as the Buddha Dharma of the patriarchs. The greatest mistake is that if you take still immobility as the right state, you will mistake the darkness for your master. This is what an ancient meant when he said, "In complete darkness, an abyss is dreadful." If you take the moving state as the right one, all plants and straws can move. Are they Tao? Therefore, the moving is the element wind, and the unmoving is the element earth, and both the moving and the unmoving have no nature of their own. If you want to catch it in the moving, it will go to the unmoving, and if you want to catch it in the unmoving, it will go to the moving. It is like a fish concealed in the water, which it can stir into ripples through which to skim. Virtuous ones, the moving and unmoving are two kinds of states, but the man of Tao can make use of both the moving and unmoving states.
Ananda, it is one of the fundamentals that makes Zen a totally unique religion than any other religion of the world. It does not want to exclude anything from your life. Your life has to be inclusive. It has to comprehend all the stars and the sky and the earth. It is not a path of renouncing the world. What Maharishi Mahesh Yogi calls transcendental meditation, Rinzai is condemning it for the simple reason that you teach people to sit silently with their tongue touching the palate, So even inside their mouth, they cannot make any movement of the tongue. And the whole body should be just a statue. Then only you can realize the truth. It is only half of the truth. And the half truth is more dangerous than a total lie. At least it is total. Life is both rest and movement. If you go sometime to Bodh Gaya, where Gautam Buddha became enlightened, there stands a temple in his memory of enlightenment. By the side of the tree where he used to sit to meditate, that was his routine. 1 hour he will sit under the tree, meditate. Then 1 hour he will walk by the side of the tree. Even the places where he moved are marked by stones to show you. A small path. 1 hour he will walk and meditate, showing perfectly that life, if it is unmoving, is dead. And life, if it has no rest, goes on moving, it too will end up very soon. Life is a balance between rest and movement. And when the harmony is achieved between the rest and the movement, you come to the very center of your life, which is always with you, whether you are sitting or moving, whether you are awake or asleep. Its existence is absolutely certain, but not by reading scriptures. You have to experience it. Then you can do anything. Then there is no problem for you, because whatever you do will be done out of a Buddha nature. It happened, a young beautiful prince got initiated by Gautam Buddha. In those days, Vaishali was one of the most richest city in India. And Buddha was staying for the monsoon near Vaishali. So the prince and every other monk used to go for their meal to beg in the city. In the city there lived one of the most beautiful women of the history. There are only 2 names that have come down as the most beautiful. One was an Egyptian queen, Cleopatra, and another was Amrapali of Vaishali. Amrapali was so beautiful It was a tradition in Buddha's time that the most beautiful woman cannot be married to any man. She cannot be a monopoly of anybody. She is so beautiful, she should remain free and available to anybody whom she likes. Even kings stood in queue before her house just to be with her for a few hours or for a full night. Tremendous money was paid to her. She has become so rich that even the king of Vaishali has to borrow money from her. Those days were of a different quality of mind. They did not call her a prostitute. They called her Nagar Vadhu, married to everyone. She is so beautiful that it will be absolutely absurd to tie her to one person. She will not remain tied. Soon somebody else will be more attractive. You are putting her into unnecessary nightmare. Let her be free. Her beauty is such that it cannot be owned. But everybody is capable to rejoice her according to her will. Such great respect for beauty. And Nagar Vadhu means married to all. When this monk of Buddha, who used to be a prince just few years before, was seen by Amrapali passing by, she sent a servant to prevent him and tell him that you don't have to go anywhere. Today, please accept my invitation. Other monks were following him because with Gautama Buddha, 10,000 monks always followed wherever he went. They could not believe that he is entering in the house of a prostitute. They rushed back. Few even did not go to bed. It was the most priority concern to report to Buddha that this man has betrayed you. He has entered into a prostitute's house. Buddha said, I know him. You need not be worried about him. Whatever does happen in his life is coming out of the very center of his being. It can never be wrong. But I will take care of it, let him come. Soon few more monks came rushing that it is too much. Amrapali has asked him to stay with him at least for the monsoon while Buddha is in Vaisali. And he has accepted it. They could not believe, they wanted immediate expulsion. He should be disrobed. Buddha said, wait, let him come. I know him just as I know you. You have not come here to save somebody's virtue. You have come here out of jealousy. You have been always jealous of that young man because he is so beautiful, so attractive, so articulate, that wherever he goes, he gets more respect, more love, more dignity. And then the prince returned, because he told Amrapali, I accept your invitation, because it is against my master to deny anything. It is cruel, but with a condition that I have to ask the permission of my master. From my side there is no objection, but if my master objects, I am helpless. I have surrendered myself totally to my master. If he says yes, it is yes. If he says no, it is no. So please forgive me if I don't return. But most probably I will return because I know my master. There was great uproar, gossiping, and the prince returned to ask the permission of Buddha. Kneeling down before him, he said, I am asking a very strange permission. A prostitute has asked me with so much love and so much prayer that I should stay this monsoon season while you are here. I have given her my agreement with the condition that if my master agrees, I will stay with you. But if my master says no, that is absolute. Then there is no question arises at all. The whole assembly of the monks were utterly silent, looking at Buddha, what he says. Buddha said, you should go and stay with the woman, because I know when a man who has entered into his own center cannot be influenced by non-essentials of life. Moreover, I know that when after 4 months you will be back, you will not be alone. Amrapali will be coming with you to become a sannyasi. I trust you, you can go with my absolute agreement. It was such a shock to the thousands of monks. They started telling to Buddha that, "What are you doing? You are destroying a young man. The woman is too beautiful, you don't know. You never go to the city. The woman is so beautiful that kings from other kingdoms come and stand in queue for their time. Just one night stay with the woman and she is not only beautiful, she is a great singer and a musician. You are sending our young man in the lion's den unnecessarily, putting him into trouble." Buddha said, "You wait, for 4 months will pass. Amrapali did everything to make the prince comfortable. She played on musical instruments, she danced, she had the delicious dishes for him. She starved his door for 4 months for any other visitor. He may be a king or an emperor. She hoped deep down that this young monk will melt, will fall in love with me, and I have been searching and searching, but I have not found a man with whom I can live my whole life. But this is the man." But the prince sat in the lotus posture whilst he was dancing, he was meditating. Whilst he was making all kinds of loving gestures, he was simply watching. 4 months he lived in her house, and finally the day of departure came. He thanked her that it has been a great discipline for me, and the whole credit goes to you. My meditation has deepened. I am more at home than ever before. My master will rejoice seeing me. Amrapali said, "Perhaps you do not know that your master not only see you, he will also see me. Reformed, I could see the all fallacious world of lust and love and power, and I also could see against it a totally different world of watchfulness and peace and serenity. You say you are grateful to me, I say I am immensely grateful to you. Just help me that your master does not reject me." The young prince said, he never rejects anybody. They both came, they both touched the feet of the master, and the young monk asked that Amrapali wants to be initiated. And as an initiation gift, they were staying in a mango grove, very big. It must have been when 10,000 people are staying and every man is having his place under one mango, there must have been more than 10,000 mango trees. Before coming, she has asked the owner of the land. He said, I cannot sell it. It has become sacred for me. Buddha stayed here. It has become now part of history. This land is no more ordinary land. Amrapali said, you don't know how much I can pay. The man said, if you really want to purchase it, my price is very high. I am putting it that high that nobody can purchase, not even the emperor. Amrapali said, you simply say it. No haggling. His price was certainly very strange. He said, you can have that land if you put golden coins all over the land, covering it completely. I don't know how many million coins will be needed. The woman said, it does not matter. The land is mine. You come with me and count the coins and measure the land. So this woman has brought this whole beautiful mango grove only for meditators and she has asked me to be initiated by you because she has seen something in me that is missing in her. And Amrapali said, I don't have even the face to ask for initiation. I have been a sinner all my life. You must be knowing that I am a prostitute. But your young man, I hoped to change him. On the contrary, he has changed me. Now I don't have any desire except to sit under your feet and follow the path where one comes to one's own innermost center. Now I know up to now I have not been even aware that there is an inner center of life. And that inner center is the most powerful thing in the world. That innermost center is not of the individual. With that innermost center we are all joined. It is the center of the whole cosmos. And once you feel yourself as part of the cosmos, eternal and immortal, the bliss and the benediction I have seen in these 4 months radiating from your disciple, I could not resist myself. The people who were very much anxious for this day to inform Buddha, now look what happened. Your disciple has not returned. Were very much ashamed. Not only he has returned, but he has returned with a transformed human being with him. Ananda the meditation that Buddha gave to the world is perhaps one of the most significant. There are many meditations, many ways to enter into yourself, but Buddha's is almost like a sharp sword. It cuts everything that hinders, and even in a split second you can reach to your ultimate destiny. But for that, Rinzai says, if you meet a Buddha, he does not mean the actual Buddha, because where you will meet him now? Even when he was alive, I mean Rinzai, Buddha was dead almost 1500 years before. So what is the meaning if you meet a Buddha, cut him down? It is a meditation process. When you go deeper into yourself, you are bound to upon meeting figures which are very close to your heart. If you have loved Buddha, you are going to meet Buddha before you meet yourself. It will be just an image. But in the silences of the heart, that image will be so radiant that there is a possibility you may sit by the side of the image and forget all about that this is not the goal. If you meet a Buddha, cut him down immediately. If you meet a patriarch, a master, cut him down immediately. If you meet an arhat, cut him down. If you meet Your parents cut them down. And if you meet your relatives, cut them down. Only thus will you be liberated. It is an inner psychological process, making you free from the master, from the parents, from the friends. It has nothing to do with the outside world. It is your inner world where images go on gathering. And unless all those images are dissolved, you cannot see yourself. They are preventing your perception. Rinchai's description of the Buddhist meditation is excellent. And if you are not held by externals, you will be disengaged and comfortably independent. Now, internals you have cut down, the images, your dreams, your love affairs, you have all destroyed and made the path clean towards you. You may be still attached to externals. You may be ready to cut down your parents' image and be free of it. But the desire for power in the world, the desire to be the richest man in the world, thousand and one desires surround you in the external world. Now the second step is easier. Rinchai begins from the harder, because he knows if you can do the harder, the easier will be done without any difficulty. If you are not held by externals, you will be disengaged and comfortably independent. After this, mountain monk has said that there is no dharma externally. Students who do not understand this immediately make their interpretation of the internal. Rinchai is saying that it is very easy to misunderstand a master. In fact, more easy to misunderstand a master than anybody else. Because he is talking a language, giving new meanings to words, talking about spaces you have never been to. It is almost human to be mistaken, to be misunderstood. He says, after this mountain monk has said that there is no dharma externally, there is no religion externally, going to the temple or to the church or to the synagogue, reading scriptures, ancient holy books. These are all externals, and there is no dharma as far as externals are concerned. They are dead skeletons, remnants of somebody who attained, but now it is too difficult to decode the scriptures. The man is no more there, only the skeleton of the man, which cannot speak, which cannot explain, which cannot help you in any way. You can go on carrying scriptures, but those scriptures will have your interpretations, not the meaning of the masters. Outside, you can go to the temples, what you are doing there. Man-made temples, man-made gods, and you are worshipping to those stone gods, and you are not alone. Almost the whole world is worshipping something or other as God. But this way you cannot find the essence of dharma. It is a very upside disturbed and perverted situation. When man starts worshipping his own made gods, you have to know the source of life from which you spring, just as roses spring. It is not a question of prayer, it is a question of intense exploration inside to find your roots, and you will be surprised. Your roots are the roots of the moon, of the sun, of the stars, of the whole existence. You are just a small branch of the vast tree. Once you know it, there is no fear of death. You cannot die. You belong to immortality. There is no more any desire. What more you can have? You have the whole universe in your hands. You are already what you could have dreamt, desired, asked to be. A great contentment descends over you. In this contentment, are all the qualities of blissfulness, of ecstasy, of all that is a continuous dance, a festivity, a ceremony. Rinjaya says, but I can be misunderstood. And the misunderstanding will be Maharishi Mahesh Yogi's transcendental meditation. When I say there is no dharma externally, then they sit against the wall with the tongue touching the palate to be in motionless position and regard this as the Buddha Dharma of the patriarch. Just sitting, how long you can go on sitting? And when you will stand up, Bodhidharma or Buddha or Rinzai will say, what happened to the Buddha? Buddha was sitting. Sitting has become your form of experience. Standing, it will disappear. Walking, you will be walking away from sitting. In simple terms, he is trying to say, and he has to be very simple because he was the man who brought Zen from China to Japan. He was talking to absolutely unconcerned people who had never heard about meditation. The greatest mistake is that if you take still immobility as the right state, you will mistake the darkness for your master. Immobility is only a rest period. Existence is motion, continuous motion. Yes, there are moments of rest, but if you choose the moments of rest as the whole of truth, you are accepting darkness as your master. You are cutting life into two, into darkness and light. Have you watched one thing? The darkness is stable. It never goes anywhere, it is always here. You bring light, you cannot see it. You take the light away, it is there. It does not come running from the MG Road. It is never late, not even a single moment. If it has gone out for an evening walk, or just to have a look what is happening around in the world, there will be gaps when you have taken the lights away and still the darkness is not there. But there is never a gap. The reason is darkness is always here even when the light is there. Just because of the light, you cannot see it. Even in the motion, action, gesture of a Buddha, there is a certain restfulness. That restfulness brings a grace to it, a beauty to it. This is what is an ancient mint when he said, in complete darkness an abyss is dreadful. Meditation is not to cut your life and your existence in two parts and then to choose one, the internal. A perfect meditation is all inclusive. It transforms you, and with your transformation, your vision of things transform. But nothing is excluded. If you take the moving state as the right one, all plants and straws can move. Are they Tao? Therefore, the moving is the element wind, and the unmoving is the element earth, and both the moving and the unmoving have no nature of their own. If you want to watch it, in the moving, it will go to the unmoving. They are continuously changing places, day between night, night becoming day, life becoming death, death becoming life. Don't hold anything. It will immediately change into its other. It is like a fish concealed in the water, which it can stir into ripples through which to skim. Virtuous ones, the moving and unmoving are two kinds of states, but the man of Tao can make use of both the moving and the unmoving states. The movement and the non-movement are both in your hands. You are the watcher, neither the moving nor the unmoving. You simply are. You have never moved, so the question of unmoving does not arise. The question of movement or no movement is irrelevant to your witnessing consciousness. Your witnessing consciousness is just existential. It is here. And if your meditation does not bring you to this state of watchfulness, it is a false meditation. If it brings you to any God, you are befooling yourself. You are dreaming. If it brings you to Jesus Christ, then Jesus Christ. Rinzai is saying, if you meet Jesus Christ, give him another cross immediately. That is your work, what you are doing here. Even Buddha is not spared, and they are all disciples of Buddha. If you meet the Buddha on the way, cut his head immediately. Nothing is more important than your own internal watchfulness. That is the very stuff the universe is made of. a wintry gust, Basu wrote, disappears amid the bamboos and subsides to a calm. What is our so-called life? A wintry gust disappears amidst the bamboos and subsides to a calm. Just a little drama, just a little playfulness, and you are gone. Our so-called life is so momentary that one should not get attached to it. Its only function, only proper function, can be to find the immortal behind, hidden in every moment is the eternal. But you can go on moving on the surface and never going deeper into your consciousness. You will move for millions of lives on the surface like ripples. It is a sheer wastage of an immense awareness that can open all the doors of your originality, of your creativity, of your beauty, of your joy. Each moment becomes such a dancing moment. Another Zen poet wrote, where the interplay of is and is not is fixed, not even the sages can know, there you are. Not in terms of is and is not, in no duality. All duality can be watched. That which can be watched, you are not. You are always the watcher. And remember, you cannot watch the watcher. That is absolutely impossible. If you watch the watcher, then one is just mind, which you are calling watcher, and the other is the real watcher. But the real watcher is your ultimate. You cannot go beyond it. It is the boundary of existence. Where the interplay of is and is not is fixed, not even the sages can know. Now there is nothing to know. Watching silently, everything disappears. An immense silence opens its doors. There is nothing to know. Knowledge becomes absolutely futile. You, for the first time, come home. This is ultimate rest. Ananda has asked, I thought enlightenment was the end of all problems. After last night, I realized it could be the beginning of a new one. How to avoid becoming a lukewarm bodhisattva? Ananda, enlightenment is the end of all problems. But if you cling to enlightenment, then you create a problem. Experience it and drop it. Don't carry it. You have experienced it, you have become it, now there is no need even to think about it. Do you think in my silent nights and days I have ever thought that I am enlightened? I don't remember, even for a single moment. It is just like you are a man. Do you remember in 24 hours sometimes that you are a man and not a lion or a parrot or a rat? Neither parrots think. Once you are enlightened, what it means to be enlightened? It simply means all problems are dissolved. But you can make, man has the capacity to make a problem where there is no problem at all. Just old habit. You can start thinking whether this is true enlightenment or not, whether this is lukewarm enlightenment or a hot potato. Ananda, even if you want to become a lukewarm bodhisattva, you cannot. You are a hot potato. You may not know it, but everybody else knows about it, that this Ananda is a hot potato Buddha. Satisfied? Now everybody will taste you. And just feel whether she is really hard potato. Don't take my word, experience it. There is even a bigger hot potato, Avirbhava. He is taking a santan somewhere in Singapore. Just to become more hot. Within 2 or 3 days you will hear her. She is bringing a whole load of old gods. 40 she has already collected. Ananda is her associate director. You can call the museum of gods, or you can call the museum of the hot potato. It is synonymous. Olga Kovalevsky gets out of bed and goes into the bathroom. She has forgotten her husband's warning about sitting on the newly painted toilet seat. She sits down and makes herself comfortable. But half an hour later, when Olga tries to get up, she is stuck to the seat. Kovalevsky comes home late and finds Olga freaking out in the bathroom. He manages to unscrew the seat from the toilet and then phones for the fire department. While the fire truck is on its way, Kovalevsky helps Olga into the bed and then covers her ass with his 10-gallon cowboy hat. Just then, Fire Chief Muldoon and his crew burst into the bedroom carrying hoses. Muldoon drops his axe and goes over to examine the situation carefully. After a few moments, he pulls Kovalevsky aside and whispers to him, "We can save your wife, but I am afraid the cowboy has had it." Big Leroy is coming home from work one day when he stops in the fisher market and buys himself an eel for his dinner. He slips into it, into his coat pocket, and goes back to the Crazy Crocodile pub for a drink. Some hours and drinks later, Leroy reads out of the pub and stumbles home. When he gets there, he wobbles into the bathroom to relieve him. Swaying backwards and forwards, Leroy fumbles into his pants and pulls out what he thinks is his prick. He feels a warm trickle running down his leg and looks down with his eyes in disbelief. "I knew you was big," mutters Leroy, "and I knew you was black, but I'm sure I did not know you had such beautiful blue eyes." Ha, ha, ha. burning bush, the ace political reporter for the American Righteous News is having a day off with his family at the zoo. They are walking by the lion's cage when Bernie notices a young boy reaching his hands through the bars to pet one of the lions. And the huge lion suddenly leaps forward with a tremendous roar, but at the last second the boy is swept to safety by a man in the crowd, spotting a sensational story. Bernie approaches the man and says, "Excuse me, sir, but that was an incredible display of instant courage. I want to write a story about you for my newspaper. Tell me, where do you get such courage?" "Simple," Swami Deva Coconut said. "I am a disciple of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh." "What?" shouts the right-wing reporter, turning and walking away. "This will make a real story for sure." The following day, the headlines of the American Righteous Newsweek reads, "Rajneesh's disciple snatches lunch from hungry African immigrant." Ronald Reagan is holding a top-level cabinet meeting in the Oval House, in the Oval Office. He gets up to make a speech about the critical state of Iranian jelly bean imports. Immediately he gets heated up and starts pacing up and down the length of the room, madly waving his arms about. Miss Snide, Reagan's personal secretary, notices that his pants zipper is open. So she goes over to him and whispers in his ear, "Mr. President, sir," she says, "your garage door is open and I can see everything." "Ah, yes," replies Reagan in a loud voice. "And what can you see? My new Lincoln Continental?" "No," replies Miss Snide, "an old Toyota with flat tires." Close your eyes. Feel your body to be frozen. Gather your life energy to the very center of your being. The more concentrated is the life energy, it suddenly bursts into a flame. This flame burns everything that is false in you and brings the original man back the way nature intended you to be, not the nurture. The original man is the Buddha. Not to be a hypocrite is the only discipline. Just drop everything false. And deeper you go, the false start dropping on its own accord. It is an exploration of tremendous meaning. If you can find your original man, you have found everything that this existence contains. All the splendor, all the glory, all the ceremony, all the joy. Nivedana, relax, let the body be there, the mind there, and you are simply the watcher. You have nothing to do with the body or the mind. Just be clear that you don't get identified with body-mind system. You remain a pure watcher, unconcerned. This brings you to the very center of your life and to the very center of the universe too. Drink it deeply, the experience, so that it remains all the day along with you, running like an undercurrent. For this moment you are a Buddha. I want you to be a 24-hour Buddha. no holiday. To be your original being is the greatest dignity that the universe can confer on you. It is nothing to do with the society, nothing to do with any religion, nothing to do with any philosophy. It is pure existence conferring on you all the joys, all the flowers, all the stars. The whole universe becomes your own. This is the dance which shows the fulfillment of meditation. Nivedana, come back, all the Buddhas carrying your experience with you, sit down slowly, silently, gracefully, remembering the place you have been. Buddhahood is not an achievement, it is only a remembrance. You are a Buddha whether you know it or not. In this peace, in this silence, how beautiful becomes the whole universe. Can we celebrate the assembly of 10,000 Buddhas?
The end.